Thanks for listening to the Drummer's Weekly Groovecast. You can contact the show at twitter.com/DW Groovecast and through Facebook at facebook.com/Drummer's Weekly Groovecast.
Good evening.
I am warning you right now, if you touch my drums, I will stab you in the neck with a knife.
Ain't a fucking. Ain't a fucking.
Mom!
Take it easy. Lower it.
I'm not going to lower it. I have to do this now.
I don't mind you playing it, but lower it.
Well, we get straight out?
No, we had a problem. I mean, we tried to do everything we could.
What do you mean?
Well, you know what I mean.
Next!
Little trouble there. You're rushing.
Yeah, well, you know, that's just like your opinion, man.
Yeah!
Well, happy Monday, everybody. We're back at it once again. And to add a little ambience to the podcast this week, John and I decided to move the studio to a construction zone.
Yes, I apologize. They're banging away and such behind my house, so it is what it is.
What John's actually trying to say is that the soundproofing at Choppler Studios has not quite been perfected yet.
I did eat a lot of eggs, and I'm disappointed with the end result.
I'm not. Well, but no, yeah, you guys might hear the dulcet sounds of the pneumatic jackhammers in the background from time to time. But, you know, like it, I said,
sonic boom yesterday. I don't know what that was.
Yeah. Well, you know, you guys are drummers. You're used to this kind of sound anyway. So it shouldn't be that much of a stretch, I would think, right?
We'll get through it.
Yeah, we'll make it. But thanks, guys, for tuning in and downloading the show. As you guys are hopefully aware by now, we're available on virtually all podcast formats. You can go and download us at iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Player FM, basically any major podcast app you can get us, because I have gotten it submitted to all the podcast apps, and most of them anyway will either pull their directories from Google Play or iTunes. So if you're not getting our show, if you can't subscribe to it on your app, please shoot us a direct message or send us an email, which is the perfect segue to say you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/Drummer's Weekly Groovecast or twitter.com/DW Groovecast or email us directly at drummersweeklygroovecast@gmail.com. And we appreciate, again, all the comments and all the love that you're giving us. It does us good. And one last thing before we jump into today's topic. We are establishing our YouTube channel, which is, again, easy to find. Ironically enough, John, it's called Drummer's Weekly Groovecast.
What?
Yeah, on YouTube. And what we're doing, aside from putting the shows up on YouTube, where you can also access the shows every week, we are also putting different videos up that correspond to the different podcasts. So, for example, when we do our segments, for example, on a great underappreciated drummer, we will put a few videos up that demonstrate the drummers we're talking about and some of the examples that we're talking about. Same thing, like today at the end of the show, we're going to do another segment on great underappreciated drum tracks, and those tracks will also be found on the YouTube channel. So, you know, we'll keep you guys up to date on what we're doing with that, and you can go to that channel and see what we're talking about. So, we got a busy show today, and we got a good one, and I would be willing to bet you that once you saw, even if you hadn't listened to the show, once you saw the topic that we posted on this, you probably wanted to listen or click download in a hurry. And I'm giving all the props today on this topic to my compadre across the table here at Choppler Studios, John. He said, hey, why don't we talk about negotiating pay? And I looked at him, I said, are you out of your freaking mind? We're still working for a living. And he goes, nope, let's talk about negotiating pay. And I said, well, that's a good topic, man. It's going to be a little touchy, but it's something that everybody whether you've been playing for 2 months or 32 years, you know, needs to hear about it. And it's probably, honestly, it's a little bit of a black science trying to figure out how to negotiate, you know, some of these different hurdles. So we're going to talk about a lot of different things. We're going to talk about things that you can negotiate monetarily and sometimes just some perks, you know, that are not necessarily money related. And then we're going to talk to you about how to actually go about doing it. So without any further ado, I'm going to let John take the stick today, and he's going to start out and tell you how it's done.
All right. Well, I think it's obvious that the majority of gigs we're going to come across are set in pay. You know, someone calls you, they say, hey, it pays blah, blah, blah. Can you do it or not? And, you know, there's I know in Atlanta, you know, there's kind of a going rate or sort of a general ballpark, you know, for private gigs, for club gigs, all that, where there's a sort of a working figure that maybe you give or take on. But so those gigs, in my opinion, you know, you'd obviously just kind of have to figure out if it makes sense for you financially and logistically. And what I mean by that is, you know, if it's a lower paying gig, does it really make sense, you know, by way of, is there going to be parking? Is it, do you have to eat? Does it fall into, you know, a time period when you got to eat and pay for a meal? You know, in my case, a lot of times childcare becomes part of the equation. So is it making sense if I have to get, you know, someone to watch my son? You know, that can add up by way of whether my wife's working or not. And so, you know, figuring all that in is really going to be your first step, I think. And, you know, the pros and cons of it, you know, big picture, does it make sense? Will this benefit me by way of playing with this person or this band or playing at this venue? And you know, just weighing out those things are really important.
Right. And, you know, one of the things that we mentioned just prior to jumping into the topic is this is a great place to kind of interject when someone comes to you and goes, this gig pays X amount of dollars and there's no wiggle room. This is one of the places where you can then try to maybe work a perk or two into the gig. Because sometimes if you don't ask, of course, you're never going to know. And a lot of times these little requests are some, or I should say many times they're easy. Sometimes they're not. But for example, if you do have to play at a place where you have to pay to park, sometimes the venue that you play at will comp your parking or just maybe add a little bit of money, you know, for that. And then also, if you're playing at a place that does serve food, a lot of times you can work food into the equation as well, so you don't have to pay. So that's a good little perk.
Great, yeah. And that kind of segues into my second part of when you get a call, and that is, if pay's not stated, you must ask right then and there. And we all have been guilty in the past of assuming, oh, this guy's stand-up, oh, it's established, it's going to be cool.
But, John, it's going to make me ungrateful and boorish.
Yeah, well, that's sadly part of business.
Yes, it is.
And anyone who is taken aback by you asking what a gig pays is someone you more than likely want to avoid, it, just from my experience, because what are they hiding?
Excellent point.
You know, we talked about sometimes you get that call like, hey, man, are you available August 4th?
And you go, well, let me look at my calendar. Yes, I am. Yeah, that sounds great.
Well, I want to clarify when you say you, that wouldn't be me. I never say yes,
yes.
until I find some things out, because I've been burned too many times. Like, yeah, man. And, you know, All joking aside, I just think it's, you have to be really careful with that. And what we kind of talked about earlier, and I agree on, is typically is something that nebulous that maybe there is something that's hid, like that gig is 9 hours away. Or
you don't like Beckley, West Virginia?
Not particularly.
Hey, I love Beckley, West Virginia, and the people that download our podcast in Beckley.
Well, that's different, because I can reach them without driving 9.5 hours. So, but nonetheless, you know, you got to get into some details here, man. Like, you know, if it's out of town, you know, what expenses are covered?
Mm-hmm.
You know, they might not be forthcoming with that information because they're not going to pay for a hotel, or they're not going to pay for your food or gas. And boy, that in a hurry can get pretty unattractive.
Absolutely. And it's, like you mentioned before, once you get that phone call and then you do open yourself up to the gig, you then have to be somewhat careful that once the details start rolling in, if you don't ask for them again, to where you don't want, in other words, you don't want to feel necessarily obligated, you know,
right?
Because it's the kind of thing where once these details come out and you've kind of been the good soldier that has said, yeah, I'm available and I'm listening to this, there's sometimes, again, that little bit of guilt or that ungrateful thing that will come into your own mind as far as like, well, man, I said that I was open for this gig, but it is in Beckley, West Virginia, and it only pays $200 and there's no hotel. And you know, and you get into that kind of weird thing,
yeah,
as far as like I've kind of pseudo committed myself to that. So, you know, you got to be careful.
I don't know, man. I kind of think unless someone's just ridiculously unreasonable, mm-hmm. I think most people, if you really are spelling out your concerns, that, you know, if you say, you know, I don't think it's going to work, they're gonna understand. They might be disappointed or frustrated, but if you were to say, under the terms you spoke of, a $200 gig, 10 hours away,
right,
no hotel and no food, you know, I mean, man, at a point it becomes where it's just detrimental to you on so many levels that, you know, if they want to think you're a jerk, so what? You
right.
know,
like, exactly, because
you have
like
every right to say no.
You mentioned before, a lot of times these folks that come, that, or I should say the majority of the time, these folks that call up with these nebulous phone calls, they are hiding something a lot of times with that. Now, there is the occasion every now and then that somebody might call and they are an above board person, but the example I like to think of is sometimes they know all this information intimately in their head. They know it's 9 hours away and they know all this stuff, and they've maybe ask a few different players on different instruments and stuff to do this gig, and so they've said it over and over and over again, and so there's some things that they're just on autopilot talking about or leaving out, so to speak, because they just think it's just common knowledge to them, therefore it should be common knowledge to you, and you really don't know. So sometimes that happens, you know, as well, but I do think that the majority of the time when somebody calls up with a nebulous offer, it's because there is something that's not very attractive about it.
Yeah, the most unattractive thing is they called some other players before a drummer. So that in itself shows how out of touch they are. You know, get the man holding it down first, people.
Point taken.
That is the lesson we didn't expect to teach today. Anyway, I mean, the other part of it, too, is when you're talking about you know, like Saturday night, for example, a lot of guys here in Atlanta have church gigs, steady church gigs that pay well, and do everything they can to get back to those. And so that might factor into the decision, like, hey, if it's not a bus and you're not coming back, or if it's that far, or, you know, I'm losing this money and that $200 has dwindled down to, like, you know, $94 after all, and all of a sudden you're like, you're losing money.
Right.
Well, you know, these things all factor in. So asking about details, and More importantly, though, asking about pay. So at the end of the gig, you're not like, it only paid $150? Wait, what? I mean, last time I played for you, it was $350. Oh, I didn't tell you that, man. Oh, you, that's on you.
This is one of the, one of those things where we talk about the devil being in the details.
Yes.
Yeah, you do need to be very aware of the details, you know, before you go into a gig, because there, like you said, there's nothing worse than expecting one thing and then finding out the reality is quite different at the end.
That's so true.
It can sour you in a lot of different ways.
There's another part of this that I hear a lot of people discussing, and that is, you know, like low paying gigs and the often negative thing that can bring to a community, your peers and everything, like, you know, this ever popular taking a gig for next to nothing, be it playing for the door or pay to play, or, you know, just playing for free, you know, this, all this kind of thing. I think it's something that we should take into consideration when we're considering gigs like that, I guess, is that we need to be mindful of how it affects other people. And we've seen time and time again how, you know, clubs are a perfect example of, you know, how we are just kind of taking it on the chin, and that affects a lot of people. And I mentioned a meme to you not long ago about Doc from Back to the Future, and
yeah,
it shows him stepping out of the DeLorean saying, I just got back from 2053 and yep, musicians are getting paid $100 a gig.
That's a good one. That's a good meme.
You know, and it's like, we're kind of partially responsible for that.
Yeah. You know, I know that there are some mindsets that are like, hey, you know, again, this is a Tuesday night, let's go ahead and take this gig for, you know, $40 a piece or whatnot. But you're right. It is something that can affect the entire community, and that there are times that you have to think larger than just yourself or just your band in that. So that's a very, very valid point.
And club owners oftentimes will be like, you just played the other night and they gave you $40 and you were happy with it. Well, that was a Tuesday. Well, so, I mean, I know you're willing to play for $40. That's what it's going to be. We run into that, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I mean, club owners aren't charging $1.50 for a cocktail like they did in 1978.
Yeah. Well,
so, you know, here we are, like, basically taking the shaft because we are taking the gig.
Right. And, you know, one thing that absolutely is worth, it just came to my mind that's worth mentioning, is when you're dealing with clubs and or restaurants, that there is the occasional time where you will book a gig. Let's say you've got a relationship with these people and you've booked some dates in advance, and you are making, we'll say, at a fair wage, you know, at that time. And you get there to the club to play your gig that night, and all of a sudden you realize when you get there, the club is shut down for a private event. And then you realize, I'm actually playing a private party for the exact same wage that I would just be playing when the club is open.
That's
right?
Smarmy.
Yeah. And so there again is one of those things that again, don't be afraid to ask for details, because that has happened before. And you know as well as I do, any event space, they make their hay on private events.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so there is definitely room for negotiation upward for you in that kind of a scenario.
Yeah. And you know, this playing for next to nothing thing, like I kind of came up with an analogy in that, you know, the subject of pro athletes and their pay is always sticky and people have their strong opinions about it and what have you.
But it's similar to musicians, right? The kind of contracts we sign?
It's nothing like that. No. because I've never been paid $60 million just to agree to play a gig.
Oh,
and have never played a gig ever on that professional level. So, no, it's not.
It's nice, John. It's nice having that happen.
Oh, you lucky dog. Hey, but what my point was, you know, sometimes you'll see a guy really getting grief about holding out for some pay in the pro sports arena. And, you know, what's lost is oftentimes there's pressure from other places, the union or the players' representatives. Like, you can't take the bro deal. You can't take the hometown discount because that's affecting, you know, another player putting up the same numbers that's going to be a free agent. And you have, you know, lessened their value because you took this. And that sounds so strange, but it's really similar in that, man, if you take a gig for $25 and two beers, well, that's lessening the value of a lot of other players. It's, you know, to the club owner, to other club owners, to a lot of people are like, you know, they're just desperate to play, man. So just hammer them. And it's just try to figure out, maybe I'm encouraging you to try to figure out, you know, a reasonable point where, oh, I got to look at the bigger picture here. I'm not helping my industry and my peers at all. And I'll probably get some brushback from some people, but that's okay. I feel strongly about it. And I think we have done ourselves a real disservice in, you know, lowering our standards and lowering our pay rate and all that. And maybe we could turn it around. I'd like to see that happen.
I think everybody would. But it is a hard topic to broach a lot of times.
Most definitely.
You know, but you know, any conversation regarding that is good conversation.
Yeah, just getting people thinking about it, and that, I mean, across the board, you know, the people hiring, the people playing, the younger guys and versus the older guys and all of that, man, it's all connected. And, you know, if you want to keep playing and making a living playing, some of these things have to be broached and thought about and considered and really kind of coming to terms with what you're willing to do and what not to do. That's something that I'd like everybody to just kind of think about on a regular basis.
Yeah. Well, now that we've kind of covered a few topics, now let's talk about actual things that are commonplace that you can negotiate.
All right.
And naturally also how to kind of approach it as well, because I've got a couple thoughts on that as well. And the two ways that I kind of want to approach the little bullet points that I have written down are, I think it's different when you negotiate for a long-term gig, like one, say, you've had for a few years and you're just asking for a pay increase, versus ones where people just call you up, like a one-off gig or if you're subbing for somebody. And then also, you can kind of, another kind of subheading on both of those are if they are travel gigs, there are certain things that you can ask for in travel perks that are a little bit different. In other words, it's not just straight money as well. You know, again, kind of the perks that we talked about earlier in the podcast. But the first thing I want to talk about is if you do have a long-term gig and, you know, you've been doing it for a while and you feel like, hey, it's time to talk to my my contractor or band leader and, you know, start bringing up the topic of a little bit of a pay bump, been doing a good job. I think one of the most important things to understand is you have to put yourself kind of in the seat of the person who's writing the checks, and you got to give this guy some or girl some reasons on why you need this extra bump in pay. And just saying that you've been there for a couple of years or a few years is really not enough. I mean, loyalty is one thing. But if you can appeal to this person's rational side with some reasons, you know, why your value has gone up, then that person will know where his money's going. And so some of the things that you can use, and hopefully this will apply, you know, that you're not just dead weight asking for more money just to ask for more money. But if you have increased the value of his band or the value of his product by just things like, for example, if you are now running sequences or running click tracks.
Creating them,
right? Perhaps you might be doing some charting for the band as well. You might be doing something like helping with a load in or a load out. Perhaps talking to a client, you know, when you're at the gig. Just doing things like that that are outside of what is just absolutely expected of you as far as like being there on time and playing the gig. Those things add value to you as a player and as a member of his organization. And if you can present that in a way that is appealing to him and not demanding, but just, again, appealing to the rational side, mm-hmm. and saying, hey, I do this, I do that, I bring extra gear, I help rehearse the band, I help other people do other things in the band, which takes things also off of your plate, then I think for the majority of the time, most people are going to be reasonable. Most leaders will be reasonable and go, I see that. I think that's good, and I think you've earned your extra blah, blah, blah that you're doing.
Yeah, man. That's good stuff. And it's just valid points. Your efforts should be rewarded, and, you know, the reality is inflation and cost of living and all that stuff factors in. You know, you have to be diligent in looking out for yourself, because no one else is going to. So being prepared to present your case and doing it respectfully, and those things a lot of times they pan out, you know. If they don't, you know, maybe that you need to think about, you know, hey,
well, what you've
this
done,
this person's not looking at me as an asset.
Exactly. What you've done when you've approached this person rationally with facts of things that you are doing, you have, even if they've decided not to give you money, you have increased in their mind your value, and therefore subliminally that probably works on most people thinking, this guy's bringing something to the table. Therefore, if he's valuable to me, he's going to be valuable to someone else also. So if I'm not going to pay this guy, somebody else very possibly will.
Yeah, great point. I think even when you're considering, you know, that you work for fair-minded and reasonable people, my experience is you have to ask almost 100% of the time, I'd like to get a raise. You know, sometimes you're going to get brushed back. Sometimes you get it's just not a good time. Sometimes you get all of these things, but it's up to you, because most people aren't just going to offer up like, you know what, man, it's time for a raise. It's not how leaders think. It's not how businessmen think, you know, they want.
John, I would say actually the majority of the time when you ask for any kind of pay increase, you're going to get brushed back.
Yeah.
The only time that you probably don't is if that person was indeed thinking it's time to give this guy a little extra money, and then
you just got lucky.
But the majority of that's why I think it's so important to just be calm and rational and give reasons for why this is supposed to happen.
Yeah, I will say that always has been the effective approach in my case.
Right.
And that's just something that, you know, you got to sell it.
Right.
You know? And that's no different than any other scenario in a working environment. You know, most of the time, you know, unless you have contractually performance based reward, you know, you got to take it upon yourself to go. If you don't ask, you don't know. You know.
That's true. Which leads me to the next part is asking for money or perks on a one-off or a sub gig, mm-hmm. and you gave the absolute most valuable advice when we started the show, which is if you do get a call as a sub or a one-off gig, you're not going to know anything about it, about the gig, so you have to ask for details up front, and I mean be explicit details, mm-hmm. you know, regarding every aspect of, first off, is it in town, what are the hours, what are the pay, you know, what are the expectations as far as learning songs, that sort of stuff. Of course, that's, you got to know that. But the other thing is when it comes to the negotiation aspect of it, some of the same technique as far as like, if they give you a number, a price, that, hey, I'm interested in the gig, but, you know, the money's a little low on that. You can then, again, try to appeal to this person's rational side. Again, don't just attack him and go, I can't believe you offered me $125, you know, for this gig. That's insulting. I normally do these gigs for three times that amount, you know, that sort of thing. Again, appeal to the rational side of him. And again, give him the qualifications from the standpoint of like, hey, you know, you called me as a sub for this, so you obviously know that I'm going to prepare for your gig. That's a good topic for a podcast.
Yeah.
And you know that I'm going to come prepared to your gig. I'm going to be on time. I'm going to have all my gear. I'm going to have all my stuff together. So here's some value for you, you know. And you can kind of work your way into the negotiation aspect like that. And then, again, don't forget that you've also got non-cash or non-money type of perks that, of course, that can be added into it. And with that in mind, let me go ahead and say this. For example, if this gig you're talking about is a travel gig, if it's on the road, this is where you can do some serious wheeling and dealing. Mm-hmm. As far as like non-cash style perks. And I'll just read you a list of the ones that I like. John, I'm an old man. I like private hotel rooms.
I'm oversharing. Mm-hmm. I don't overshare, I'm oversharing.
So yes, negotiating a private room can be sometimes it can be pretty easy, because one of the things you have to keep in mind is that a lot of times the hotels that you're staying in are being provided by the client, and it's not necessarily from the person that books you. So a lot of times he can just request that extra room, and that's no skin off his back, but it's a big perk to you,
right,
to have that private room. So that's the first one I like to throw out there.
Love that.
Yeah. The next one is, again, being an old man, I like to travel nice. That's a big part. And so if you can get any sort of like travel class upgrade, again, sometimes travel is provided by the client. And so if you can get some kind of travel perk as a class upgrade, if you're flying, again, it really makes the gig easier. Mm-hmm. You do that. You can always negotiate your per diem. A lot of gigs, when you're out on the road, will give you a per diem. And of course, we know that we can use that for food or just sundries, shall we say. And sometimes there's some wiggle room on those per diems. An extra $10, $15 a day can, if you're out for a while, can add up.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, the other thing, too, is, depending on where you are, that you've got to be careful with that, you know. Eating in Wichita versus eating in New York.
Slightly different.
So, yeah. And, you know, from my experience with per diem, sometimes there'd be a bump, mm-hmm. for, like, if we were in New York City or San Francisco, or, you know, a more expensive place, we might get some extra. So that's not, you know, people realize that's a reality, you know, and you often are taken care of like that. So that's cool.
You know, and if you're a crafty fellow, much like myself and yourself, if you do get a little bump in a per diem, but if you find out that your gig has catering, though, still you can pocket that little bit of extra per diem and just eat off the catering buffet, which is always nice.
Yeah, yeah. I've saved quite a bit of money in that mm-hmm. in that way before.
Yeah. Another great little non-monetary perk is, depending on the level of gig that you're doing, it's always possible to try to negotiate in some help for loading in and setting up, having a tech.
Woo!
Yeah, boy, that's a good one, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that sheer excitement and tone in your voice is that it rarely happens. So, yes, it's a good one.
Hey, let me tell you, I will take it if they will just get my gear to the stage. Mm-hmm. And I'll set up. I'll take it from there, boys. Just get my stuff in and get it where it needs to be. You know, that's a nice little perk.
Yeah, I used to kind of dread backline gigs, like, oh, it's not my stuff. You know, I got to tweak this and that, and I got to tune and blah, blah, blah. And I realized long ago, you know, when I'm done with this gig, I'm walking off this stage, mm-hmm. and I love that drum set. Even if it was a piece of junk, it was like, that's awesome. I love it, man. That's a good feeling. And oftentimes, you know, it's a pretty brutal travel schedule to get to. Mm-hmm. You know, you're one-off backline gigs, and it's just like I've learned to – or like local, you know, multi-band yeah. gigs where the headline guy's, yeah, you can use my kit. I'm like, yeah, cool, especially if there's Smith's Old Bar with stairs.
Yeah.
Like, man, that sounds great, bro. Yeah.
John, do you know what you've morphed into when you walk right off stage? A singer.
If this weren't a podcast, I'd ask for a moment of silence on that sheer horrifying thought.
So,
a singer.
Yeah, another.
No wonder they're always so happy.
Another great monetary perk is if you're working a public event that's ticketed, you can always ask for extra tickets for friends and family.
Yeah.
That's a nice little thing, you know, a nice little service you can offer your friends, have them come out and see you play.
Yeah.
You know, no skin off
more
their back.
More than likely getting wined and dined and
come backstage, eat a little bit of catering,
might
right?
Rub shoulders with, you know, big wigs, who knows?
You never know. And then lastly, if you have to get yourself to the gig, ask for gas money. I know we've already talked about that a little bit, but there's a little subheading that I want to put on this. And that is, some people get the wrong idea about gas money. And sometimes they think, I've got to ask for like the current IRS like mileage rate on that of like 50 something cents per mile, which is, that's in a perfect world of which we do not live, folks. So don't get, one of the things I want to say is don't get hung up on that from that standpoint. That's just, that just really doesn't occur in our industry. It's just part, it's not really part of our industry. So
the only reality to that is if you had to pay for your gas, you can write it off at that.
Correct.
But no one's paying that.
Right, exactly. So go in to that negotiation with somewhat, I don't want to say lowered expectations, but at least measured expectations that you're not, you know, going to get 53 cents a mile or whatever it is, you know, to do that. Because in a lot of ways, you'd probably end up making as much just driving there as you would on the gig if it's very far out of town.
Yep, no yeah. question.
All right. So, John, you had a good one, man. You were talking about cartage as well.
Yeah. You know, a lot of people think it's a thing of the past, or it's, you know, man, you chose this instrument, you should, you know, just accept it, blah, blah, blah. And I know. I work for someone who sees the value in the cartage thing, and it's largely based on the fact that he sees how much I bring, how early I'm there. Oftentimes, you know, we have to load in a different place that's a way bigger pain mm-hmm. and way more challenging than walking in and having valet parking like a horn player or singer could often do. And, you know, we just end up, you know, even like drummers, you know, we spend more money. Perishable items, sticks and heads, mm-hmm. you know, it's not an unreasonable request. And it kind of goes along the same lines of when you're asking for a raise, in that you point out the reality of, I'm here an hour early, I'm here 30 minutes later, I have way more things, you know, to bring in, often inconvenienced in that endeavor. And, you know, I'm spending more money, I'm working oftentimes harder. You know, we keep picking on singers and horn players, but, you know, throughout the course of a gig, like we often do, a private party, we're playing on every tune, man. You know, horn players might take a couple songs off. Singers, you know, they might only, in my band, there's five singers. So they might, you know, they might sing six or eight songs the whole night.
That's true. Lead.
Now, singing background and mm-hmm. and all that. But, you know, the workload is up there. But that, you know, is yet another way of selling the reality of how much effort you have to put in. And so a cartage isn't a big deal. And look, my cartage is not significant by any means. It's a token of appreciation.
Right.
But very much appreciated.
Yeah. And you know, one thing, if you folks want to have a little bit of negotiation leverage to back up John's point there, the only time that I actually get paid cartage is when I do union gigs. And cartage that's a given. When you do a union, if you're bringing in gear for a session or if you're bringing in gear for just a regular gig, cartage is just automatically added. And again, like John said, it's not a great deal of money. It might be, I think it's $45, mm-hmm. I believe is what it is. It might be 50 now. It's either 45 or 50 bucks, something like that.
Maybe I should join the union.
Yeah, but you can, in other words, you can use the fact that union gigs do automatically just include cartage on, you know, for a drum set player,
mm-hmm.
much less if you're starting to bring other accessories and whatnot. So that's a great point.
I've gotten a little bit of kickback from that in that, well, you're not paying me dues, you know, and then there was the other part is like, you know, what has the union done for you lately? And, you know, there's all these pretty valid arguments that,
well,
so like, again, mm-hmm. like in my case, I just appreciate the gesture. And I don't get hung up on the amount as much as someone's seeing value in my time and efforts. And that goes a long ways.
Yeah.
And you can ask, you know.
Sure.
Worst thing that's going to happen is they're going to say no.
John, I said a magic word a few minutes ago that we haven't touched base on, but I know we want to touch base on it. Mm-hmm. And it comes to sessions, and we remember recording sessions. And man, you had some gold on this thing when we were talking about it earlier. So,
well, more than any other subject regarding playing gigs, the working scenario, I think this one brings up the most anxiety. And in some ways, we're guilty of framing sessions as such a big deal. And it's like, oh, you know, and in some ways it is, you know, it's recorded for posterity. And
it's fewer and further between than just live gigs.
Most definitely. I know in my case, that's mm-hmm. without a doubt. But you get into all this. There's a lot that brings on that anxiety, you know, how much we built up recording and session and, you know, playing on session and playing on someone's recording and being flattered they asked and this producer believes in me and blah, blah. Well, there's so many things right there that are kind of beating you down in your self-worth and self-value, not in a negative sense, but just in the, we frame it differently. Like, oh, wow, you know, I should be more lenient in regards to sessions. And so it just creates this weird thing where I've had conversations with veteran players like, oh, I never know what to do or say, or if they ask me. And my kind of thought was, you just have to be careful. I mean, sometimes they'll just come out and say, here's what it pays, and that's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you get, well, it, you know, it's a day rate, man. It, you know, like, I always was kind of getting in that 450 to 6 range.
Mm-hmm.
You know, pretty cool. It's an 8-hour day. You have a break. You eat, and sometimes that's paid for and all that. Well, that's a nice day's work. And you get done what you can get done. There's a little bit of pressure on you.
Yeah.
You got to deliver, because if you keep blowing it, you know, you're wasting progress and time and effort of others. But
yeah, they're going to expect more than one song out of that 8-hour day for sure.
Yeah, no doubt. And that kind of brings on that per song thing, man. That's a slippery slope.
That's a super slippery slope from the exact opposite standpoint of what we talked about.
Yeah.
You know?
Like, yeah. I kind of gauge it on who the producer is and what I know about them or my experience in working with them. I have two or three friends that would call me and say, hey, man, it pays $100 a song. Well, I know we're going to go in there and knock out. They're going to be clear cut in their vision. They're going to, oftentimes, you know, the two or three guys I'm thinking of are pretty good drummers to begin with. So the communication is stellar in that, no, this is what I want. And if they can't verbalize it, they probably could show me.
Right.
So we're going to accomplish a lot in that sense. Like, you know, we'll get pretty far along just in that. You know, these guys know what they want and how to get it out of you. And so I might agree to that. You know, yeah, we could do that. If it's someone I don't know or they have a reputation of the rabbit trail guy that, you know, you veer off here and there, I'll be like, I'm not really into that. So it's kind of more of a per producer, per project basis on that thing. But, man, you should have an idea of what you're willing to do.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and then, you know, you also get into the thing like, hey, is there a kit provided? If not, I dread getting sounds. I dread it. It's just a drag. And, man, I've even been known to pay someone to tech and take a hit.
Yeah.
You know, like if I made $500 a day, I might pay someone that initial setup day. Maybe it's a 3-day session.
Yeah.
I might pay a friend to do, you know, hey, man, here's $150 to show up at 9 o'clock and set up and tune, and then I come in and tweak.
Right.
Just because the stress of it is I can focus on playing. You know, some people will be like, why would you do that? That's crazy. I'm like, man, you know, to each his own.
Yeah.
I want to be relaxed. I don't want to be stressed out about that. I can deliver maybe a better performance if it's worth it for me to pay this person. But, you know, if it's kit provided, you're not getting into that. Man, I don't really dig the way your kit sounds. I'm like, it's your kit. So, you know, so a lot of things to consider there, too.
Yeah. And, you know, another thing, and boy, this could almost be another topic for a podcast, is there is the occasional time when you're doing a master session for something that you can negotiate. And sometimes it's actually just given to you. You can get residuals. You can get reuse on stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that's something that you should be aware of. I love to tell the story that you've heard me talk about before, where I did and I knew going into the session that it was going to be a buyout, but it was going to be a national TV spot. And it was just a 15-second spot. Went in, did the entire session, didn't take any more than, really, after you got the sounds, 15 minutes, you know, cutting it a few different ways and whatnot. Leave there with a check for a fair amount of money for, you know, that amount of work. And then you see it on TV. Great. Wonderful. Hey, this is cool. See it on TV. You see it on TV again. Great. Then I was on tour. I was out of the country. I saw that sucker dubbed in 3 or 4 different languages, man, when I was, you know, on different continents. So, you know, there's a time where you can actually, if you inquire a little bit, maybe try to work something in as far as a residual, because man, there is nothing better than walking out to the mailbox and getting a check. Where I actually had that happen again on a union session. I did some little, I guess you would call it like background music or vignettes for a TV movie. Probably, I did that session probably about 10 years ago and got paid to scale, you know, in the studio. But I did sign a contract, a union contract, which included the residuals. And man, for I believe it was either 3 or 5 years, I got a yearly check.
Nice.
And so in your negotiations with that, inquire. Again, ask for the details when you're doing sessions like that.
Well, it's funny you mentioned jingles. Like, I live about 30 miles outside of Atlanta. And if I heard something I played on in Atlanta, I'm thrilled. So, you know, you're just talking way over my head now. But, you know, the thing about, I have a funny story too. Like, we are painfully oblivious to the business side of things often as musicians. And, you know, you have to, you owe it to yourself to have some working knowledge of how that can work, residuals and that, because a lot of guys just won't, they don't have any idea how that even could be part of the negotiation or the plan. Yeah. Or that it could be 5 years of checks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that what a drag you're missing out on that because you weren't aware, informed, up to speed on how things work in, you know, advertising versus movie versus, you know, airplay.
Right.
You need to be somewhat aware. I mean, and it gets really detailed, but just have some working knowledge in there. I had someone call me one time and he's like, hey man, I'm demoing something for a major car company. And can you do it for $50? We really believe in it, but I think we gotta push it. You know, we gotta sell it to them. Yeah, sure, I'll do it. Did the jingle and it sounded really good. And
mm-hmm.
He got a really good singer to do it.
Yeah.
And it was like, yeah, this is how we're not going to get that. And, you know, just kind of went away. And like 3 or 4 months later, he calls me up and he's like, man, you know anything about, you know, when things go national, you know, like, if they, you know, how to contractually work that out where we're not screwing ourselves and all that. And, you know, because such and such is going to pick this up and it's going to go national and we're just really thrilled about it. And I said, I'll tell you what, man, for like $500, I'll tell you everything you need to know. And he's kind of silent and he's like, well, why would I give you $500, you know, because I only did a national jingle for $50 and you should take care of your friends.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh yeah. So I ended up getting a little bit, but I had a friend that had that almost identical situation happen where they did it for free.
Oh,
and the
yeah.
guy called him like, yeah man, it's going national, man, I gotta make sure I'm not gonna screw myself. And he's kind of like, I did it for free.
Yeah.
Can you factor in a little bit of money for me?
Yeah.
You know, and so, I mean, man, you got to be careful.
And, details,
and know,
guys.
Know yeah. your business.
Know your business. Know your details. So, yeah. Well, we hope this helped you guys out a little bit. We covered a lot of different topics from one-off gigs to long-term gigs, recording sessions, how to help you ask for some money, some reasons why, and then, of course, some like non-monetary perks as well. So put that in your quiver, shall we say, your arrows in a quiver, and ask your potential or your employers about this.
At least get a free t-shirt.
Yeah.
Come on.
Absolutely. So, well, on to the next segment, John. We've got some underappreciated great drum tracks today we're going to talk about.
Always one of my favorite subjects.
Oh, and I've got a good... I'm going to start out with a good one today.
I'm sure you will.
I'm going to start out with a little rock band called The Who, John. Keith Moon, right?
Oh, I assume so.
It's not Keith Moon!
What?
It's not Keith Moon!
Then it's... I'm just not interested in hearing anything about it, Phil.
And that's the exact litany of emails that I'm going to get on this.
Undoubtedly.
It's heresy. This guy's not talking about Keith Moon with The Who. No, it's Kenny Jones. It's Kenny Jones, and he actually does a little bit of a Keith Moon impression. So I am going to give Keith Moon a little bit of love. And the track that I'm talking about today is from an early 80s Who record called It's Hard, and the track is called Athena. It was a minor hit, mm-hmm. John. Yeah, I'm sure you remember.
I do remember it.
Probably like around 82 or something like that.
That sounds right.
Yeah.
Late in my high school years when I peaked.
Yeah.
Did I say that out loud?
He said that out loud. But yeah, this was a track that it's kind of like three drum tracks in one. It's like three Kenny Jones tracks in one. And it has three very kind of distinct sections in it, where on the verses, Kenny is playing just kind of straight time, a little mm-hmm. bit of hi-hat time with kick, the occasional snare hit or so. And then when he goes to these, we'll call them choruses, he goes into this wild man Keith Moon sort of snare drum, Tom Phil kind of a groove all the way through. It's really cool. And then when he goes to this bridge, and this is a part of the song I'm pretty sure that Pete Townsend's singing on this bridge, he kind of goes into this bizarre floaty ECM cymbal kind of groove.
I remember.
Remember that? Yeah. And so it's this bizarro kind of tune that Kenny Jones is just playing his tail off on, man. He sounds great on it. He's, again, and I was joking with you guys at the beginning, a lot of people just stopped listening to The Who, you know, once Keith Moon died. But I don't know. I thought that was a pretty fertile period for that band after that. I thought they had a few really good records that came out after that. And I thought Kenny Jones sounded like a million bucks, man, when he played with The Who.
He did. He already had a, you know, track record of sounding like a million bucks, in my opinion.
Too, massive street cred prior to The Who.
Absolutely. And he, you know, look, I don't care who you are.
Who? Yeah.
I don't care whom
you
may be. That is a gig that is just got to be brutal to step into.
Yeah, it'd be like, you know, stepping in for Neil Peart after Rush, you know?
Yeah, it's just such a unique situation and a unique voice and embraced by rabid fans as the be-all and end-all.
Yeah,
and I saw Kenny one time live with them, and I thought he did an admirable job and you know, trying to keep the spirit of Keith alive in the songs that obviously Keith recorded, but you know, brought some of his own thing too.
Yeah,
and that's I applaud anyone that can step into an environment like that and come out relatively unscathed. That track is a great example of him really finding his place and putting his stamp on something. And I think a lot of Who fans probably appreciate that tune.
I would hope so, because he does. He channels Keith Moon while being very loyal to himself.
Yeah.
You know? And kind of the last thing I want to say about that, and then I'll turn it over to you, John, for your track, is in particular, listen to the last like 7 to 8 seconds of that song. They end on a chorus, and there is a little kind of a fill, the way that he voices that last part of that chorus. Man, it is just funky and in the pocket. This sounds like a million bucks, man. That last 7 or 8 seconds is probably my favorite part of the song as far as like what Kenny's playing on it. So yeah. I'm gonna shut up about Kenny now. So
yeah, but he deserves to be talked about because he's a stellar rock and roll drummer.
Yeah.
And as the Al Bundy of rock and roll, I appreciate you bringing up a fine track from a fine gentleman from my peak years.
Yeah.
Thank you, Phil.
Oh, hey, you're very,
very
welcome,
very,
man.
Very considerate of you.
I'm looking out for you, brother.
So nice. Well, I am just about the polar opposite of anything the Who recorded in my choice today.
Do tell.
A gentleman who has a discography that is arguably second to none, man, if you really look at the scope of it. And it's Roger Hawkins on an Aretha Franklin tune called Never Loved a Man. And it is, though a hit, not like the, you know, mega respect and
rock steady.
Yeah, yeah, all that, you know, like it had some airplay, but I mean, man, just the most ridiculously perfect example of taste, restraint, groove, feel, even sound. It's just such a magic track. And I've read enough about the recording of this song, which, by the way, was the only Aretha song recorded in Muscle Shoals at Famous. There was a big drama and falling out surrounding Aretha and her husband, and they went back to New York, but Atlantic, in their infinite wisdom, decided to bring the Swampers to New York to record a lot of the iconic tracks. So it ended up the only one. And the story is that they just worked their behinds off trying to find something to work on this song. And Spooner Oldman starts that piano thing, and everybody just fell in. And Hawkins just, I mean, there's not a more perfect track for, it's just so amazing. And I listen to it regularly. So an unheralded track by way of Roger Hawkins, which is hard to talk about because he has so many that we just embrace as amazing. But that one is one of his finest moments, in my opinion, and not quite as popular as some of the other mega hits.
Well, there you go, folks. And these two tracks that we just talked about are going to be uploaded to our YouTube page by the time you guys download this podcast. So if you want to hear both of these tracks, just bop your way on over to the YouTube page for Drummers Weekly Groovecast, and you can get an example of what we're talking about.
Very good. Thanks for hanging out with us today and, you know, talking about the often uncomfortable subject of pay, compensation. It's something that, though you may never get used to, you got to deal with. And we hope that at least some simple guidelines can help you in the anxiety-ridden approach to all of that.
That's right, guys. Write this stuff down. Write these reasons down. Write these things that you are asking for down. Get all this stuff down. Even practice how you want to approach these people.
Yeah. And don't hesitate to let us know, you know, if we overlook something, because we all have to do it often. And I don't think there's ever the perfect approach. We're talking about humans. We're talking about money. That brings out a lot of weirdness. So any ideas you guys have, you know, share it with us on Facebook or, you know, email us, and we'll pass it along. We'd appreciate that.
That's it, guys. Thanks again for listening to us. We appreciate each and every one of you. And as usual, check back every Monday on your favorite podcast app. Download us. Get to us. Let us know what you like, what you don't like, what you want to hear. Tell all your friends if you like us. And if you don't like us, still tell all your friends.
Got some great stuff coming up. Can't wait to share it.
Talk to you guys later.